Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What do you love about music? To begin with, everything.
Putting on a great show is the most important thing you can do. One great rock show can change the world.
Welcome to Sound Opinions. I'm Jim DeRogatis, the pop music critic at the Chicago Sun-Times.
And I'm Greg Cott. I write about rock and roll for the Chicago Tribune. Jim, I am very excited about tonight's show, even more so than usual, because we have got a band that even just thinking about them brings a smile to my face.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
This is Art Brut, a British band who is just now coming out with their first record in the United States. But they blew us away at the South by Southwest Music Conference in Austin, Texas. And then literally days later, were in the studio with us playing live for us.
We've also got reviews of the new albums by Granddaddy, the Southern California psychedelic pop band, and Tool, which just debuted at number one on the Billboard album chart last week with 550,000 copies of its fourth album sold in 1 week. But first, as always, we have some music news. Great White, once most famous for that song, now more famous, infamous, for something that happened on the night of February 20th, 2003 in Providence, Rhode Island, a nightclub fire that claimed 100 fans due to a pyrotechnic, ill-advised pyrotechnic display by that band in that small club. The man deemed responsible for that fire, the band's road manager, Daniel Bichelle, 29 years old, was facing 10 years in prison for that fire, received a 4-year prison sentence from a judge in Superior Court in Rhode Island. The reaction in the packed courtroom was not one of approval. Many of the people were relatives of the victims. They had hoped to see the maximum sentence imposed upon Bichelle. Instead, the judge, a Francis Darrigan, told Bichelle that the greatest sentence that can be imposed upon you has been imposed upon you by yourself. And Bichelle was sobbing when the verdict was read. He has said this fire was a product of his own stupidity as much as it was any kind of maliciousness. And his sentence now, 4 years in prison as a result of that fire. So Bichelle, the road manager, is sentenced this week. But still coming up, Greg, is the manslaughter trial of the two owners of that venue. We'll have to see where that winds up.
God didn't make little green apples, and it don't rain in Indianapolis in the summertime. And there's no such thing as Dr. Seuss or Disneyland, and Mother Goose is no nursery rhyme. God didn't make little green apples, and it don't rain in Indianapolis in the summertime.
Roger Miller's
famously silly song about apples brings us into this story about the two dueling apples. Apple Corps, the Beatles record company, has lost its trademark infringement court fight with Apple, the computer company. I don't know, Greg, this is one of the silliest court cases I've heard of in a long time. Two giants, two mega corporations fighting for what seems to me to be no good reason whatsoever. Apple, the record company, the Beatles record company, always owned the trademark on that name, which, you know, they didn't invent. Let's face it, it predates Adam and Eve, right? As a music company. Apple, the computer company, there was no problem there between the two Apples when Steve Jobs' company was only selling computers. But of course, recently they've gotten into the music download business via iPods and iTunes. The Beatles Apple had great resentment for this. Part of the resentment, they've been refusing to allow the Beatles catalog to be available for digital download, which is probably, you know, the holy grail still of digital downloading. Arguably, they would like us to think so. I don't know. I don't know how many of the iPod generation really is eager to download the Beatles, and their parents already have been sold this stuff 15 times, you know, three vinyl copies of each album and six CD copies and then box sets. And the court case was finally decided, and the Beatles lost. You know, talk about two giants battling for absolutely nothing, Gregor. Am I missing something?
No, you're not missing anything, but I think there's two interesting caveats here. I mean, Judge Edward Mann, who ruled in this case, basically ruled in favor of Apple Computer Company, admitted early on in the case that he does own an iPod. So he might be slightly biased, and he probably wants some Beatles tunes on that iPod.
Yeah, so maybe he's saying,
okay, let's make this happen. Secondly, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think it's only a matter of time before Apple Corporation is not just a music store, but in fact a record company, a music company.
Yeah.
So maybe this lawsuit will have more relevance in a few years, because I think it's inevitable that rather than paying out these licensing fees to record companies and bands in order to have the music in the iTunes stores, that they'll eventually want to start signing their own bands and having all that cash flow go to them.
Sure, especially because the major label system as we know it, which only a couple of years ago was 12 or 15 labels, now down to 4, is crumbling. It's a brontosaur running full speed for the tar pits, as we've said many times. It's about to be extinct. And maybe Apple and, I don't know, Microsoft will be the new content providers, the new labels. But still, Greg, is anybody ever going to confuse the Beatles Apple Records with any other company named Apple? I mean, you know, take all the money they wasted on lawyers and feed Bangladesh or something, you know?
Oh, help me, please, doctor. I'm damaged. There's a plane where there once was a heart. It's sleeping, it's a baiting. Can't you please tear it out?
We here at Sound Opinions are happy to report that the doctors have indeed helped Rolling Stones guitarist Keith Richards, who is recovering, if we are to believe their publicist, recovering just fine from the mysterious head injury he suffered last month on the island nation of Fiji. And contrary to reports in the New Zealand press, I guess those New Zealanders just never get their facts straight, he has not suffered brain damage, at least not from this mysterious fall. The Rolling Stones publicists finally responded. They took even longer than Dick Cheney's people to say what happened when the vice president shot somebody.
Yeah.
Finally responded, no, it has not been major brain surgery, although Keith Richards did have a hole drilled in his head, which isn't funny, but it's not a major operation. He had a mild concussion. He was operated on to have some pressure removed from his head. They say that he's doing just fine. Again, quote, there's no brain damage. He continues to improve as expected. At least no brain damage from this. The 60-some-odd years of substance abuse and hard living, that remains to be seen. He's going to rejoin the tour shortly. They're going to be touring Japan, China, Australia, New Zealand, making, you know, $250 million a night. Why Richards fell, we still don't know. He was either A, climbing a palm tree, which I love. I just love that story. Or B, he fell off a watercraft.
I'm more intrigued by the idea of drilling a hole in Keith Richards' head. And what do they find when they drill that hole? You know, like there was an ounce of hashish. There was five flasks of undrunk gin in there. There was a Mars bar.
Mars bar. Yeah. Oh, the contents are now for sale on eBay.
I recall alone through fields of cane to a house of tin and timber, and in the sky a rain of falling cinder. From time to time the waste, memory waste.
You're listening to Cattle and Cane from a Australian band, the Go-Betweens.
Bono said that's one of his favorite songs ever.
It is indeed one of Bono's favorite songs, and in certain polls it consistently comes up in the top 10 as one of the best Australian pop songs of the last 30, 40 years, and it very much is. It was written by a man named Grant McLennan, co-founder of the Go-Betweens, one of the very best bands out of Australia in the late 70s through the 80s, and reformed in recent years to have another fine run of shows across the world. McLennan was found dead in his home in Brisbane a few days ago at the age of 48, passed away in his sleep, cause unknown at this point. Shocking, shocking news. Robert Forster, his friend and fellow songwriter in the Go-Betweens, said instantaneously that the band was no more. McLennan and the Go-Betweens leave behind a tremendous legacy, even though they did not have the commercial success of many of the bands that they influenced or were admired by, including Bono, including the Smiths and Morrissey. They had a tremendous body of work.
Greg, people probably only know them, if they know them at all, from the early alternative era hit, staple on MTV for a while, Bachelor Kisses. Great video with the two female members and Foster and McLennan. Early staple on like MTV's 120 Minutes.
Right.
But a real partnership, right? I mean, it was Forster, Robert Forster, and Grant McLennan were kind of a power pop 80s version of Lennon and McCartney.
Absolutely.
With each completing the other's thoughts.
Mm-hmm. And if there was a dichotomy there, Forster was sort of considered the darker, edgier half of the duo. But the one thing that was at the core of the Go-Betweens music that I really, really loved, and especially true of McLennan, was the humanity of it. The song Cattle and Cane, he's just talking, looking back on his childhood, the reminiscences of his childhood, and he's talking about getting old in that song. Here's a guy who was in 1983, he was what, you know, still in his 20s, and he's thinking about the aging process and thinking about growing old as he reflects back on his childhood. Wrote many, many fine songs in that vein. Gentle, moving pop songs. One of the best going to play here next, Bye Bye Pride, from the 1987 Go-Betweens record Tallulah, which features a rare thing in a rock song, an oboe solo by one Amanda Brown, a member of the Go-Betweens at that time. Rocks and Music, maybe the only other oboe solo, Jim. I mean, can we think of any others can qualify?
Somewhere when we run out of topics, round about our 10th year doing it, I think we'll do the Oboe Rock Show.
Okay. Yeah. Listen for the oboe solo then in Bye Bye Pride from the Go-Betweens.
A white moon appears like a hole in the sky. The mangroves go quiet. In La Brisa della Palma, a teenage Rasputin takes the sting from a gin. When a woman learns to walk, she's not dependent anymore. A line from her letter, May 24. And out on the bay, the current is strong. A boat can go lost. But I didn't know someone could leave you so lonesome. Tied up and held for ransom. To take your shoes and go outside. Stride, oh let's stride. Walk to that tide. Cause the door is open.
Great song from Grant McLennan of the Go-Betweens, dead at the age of 48. That was one of his best efforts, Bye Bye Pride.
Up next, we're going to talk to the members of Art Brut, a British pop-punk band we discovered at South by Southwest earlier this year. Just love them to pieces. They came into the studio not long after the South by Southwest conference down at Wall to Wall Recording here in Chicago. Eddie Argos is the inimitable lead vocalist. Ian Katzkilken, Jasper Future are the guitarists. Freddie Feedback, what a great name. She's a woman. And Mikey B on drums. They are truly one of a kind on Sound Opinions.
We are here at beautiful wall-to-wall recordings on the near north side of Chicago with Art Brut, all the way from England, visiting our Mary's
currently
town.
One of our favorite bands in the world.
We were just at South by Southwest Music Conference in Austin, Texas, 1,400 bands. I forgot 1,399 other bands.
Yeah.
This band right here, I went to see them twice. That's how good they were. First time, great. Had a smile on my face. Couldn't even take notes. Just smiling the whole time.
Well, and I told you guys, I went to see that second show. I was hoping you'd suck so that I could argue with him about it. And I walked out of that venue going, "Art Brut, top of the pulps." And then I went home and I said, well, you know, they can't be any good on record. I mean, all right, that was a fun show, but I had a couple of beers and the record's great. So and so we're getting you right on the cusp of it finally coming out in America, right?
Yeah, May the 23rd. I found out today.
May the 23rd. And did you get signed at South by Southwest or the buzz had kind of been building, right?
I think, I don't know, yeah. Buzz has been building, I'm sure. I don't know. I met them for the first time at South by Southwest. Like, hey, we're your record label. Oh, amazing. I didn't know we had one.
Really?
Nice
so
to meet
they didn't,
you.
Like, take you out for one of these, you know, $150 plate dinners or
they
anything?
They took us out for drinks at South by Southwest.
Drinks? So, yeah, man, nice. You sell yourself too easily.
I prefer drink to food.
All right. Okay. As long as you got what you wanted.
That's great. The guys are all set up. Before we have any more conversation, I think we ought to have you guys play a song for us. Record was out in the UK last year and has caused quite a stir over here. Finally going to be officially released. What do you guys want to play for us first?
I think we're going to play My Little Brother.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Good plan, Art Brut? Yeah, they're all nodding. It's good. Let's go.
Art Brut is in the house.
Well, we got a lot of hard
work today. We gotta rock at the Government Center.
You're hearing a bit of Government Center from Jonathan Richman. He was a big influence on Art Brut's lead singer, Eddie Argos. We're going to talk more with the Argos and the rest of the band in just a minute on Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio. Later on in the show, we're going to have reviews of the new albums from Tool and Granddaddy.
Won't stop until we see secretaries smile and see some office boys jump up for joy. We'll tell old Mr. Ahern, calm down while, sir, that's the only way the center is ever gonna get better. So we gotta rock a rock a rock a non-stop tonight at the Government Center, where they put the stamps on the letter. Write it down in the ledger. Oh, tonight we'll make them feel all right. Oh, tonight. What you say, man?
Make it
too bad. Oh, yes, tonight. We'll go there tonight. We'll take the everything we got.
Back to Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio. We're here at Wall to Wall Studios with Art Brut, Eddie, Ian, Jasper, Freddie, and Mikey. Thanks, guys, for coming in. Eddie, tell us about how the band got started. It was at a party, right?
Yeah. I'd had another band before, and they'd all gone to university, so I moved to London to start another band, but everyone was saying no to me because I can't play an instrument or sing. So I was going around this party asking everyone to be in a band with me, and they all said no, and I was getting drunker as I went around too. So by the time I got to Chris, our old guitarist, I was telling loads of lies and saying that I'd had albums out before, and I could sing like Frank Sinatra and all this business. And so, yeah, he believed me and said that we'd have a band together. And then he taught Freddie, a bass player, how to play the bass. And I thought, to even the scale up a little bit, I better get one of my friends in. So I got my heavy metal guitarist friend, Ian Catskill.
And that is an impressive belt, heavy metal guitarist. With yes. Both Art Brut guitarists have got like all sorts of studs on their belts.
Ian and Jasper are comparing belts right now.
Very, very rock. Too much rock. But Eddie, one of the things that's great about so much of your music is that it's about wanting to make music. And yeah. Despite the fact that I have no talent, I'm not going to let that stop me.
I tried to learn so many different instruments, and I just can't. And then one day I heard like Lou Reed and Damon Albarn singing and thought, they can't sing. I can learn that instrument. It's just having a voice, do you mean? So
right.
I did that.
And a personality.
Oh, thank you very much.
Well, you were messing around, though, in bands where it was kind of more about personality and having sort of a stage presence as opposed to any actual musical ability that you through.
In my first band with Jasper, I used to play the Hoover.
A vacuum cleaner.
Vacuum cleaner, yeah.
So would you mic the Hoover vacuum cleaner?
Well, it's really hard to find where the sound comes from. So I was just going to, I'd end up just going to like moving the microphone around until I found the right. Yeah. We played once and someone was just screaming at me, that's not music, with the hands over their ears.
Wow, that's great.
But I was like, no, it is. It's just clever, clever jazz. You don't understand.
Well, and Jim was mentioning the directness of the lyrics, celebrating being a band, celebrating, my little brother. People take it as kind of irony, shtick, tongue-in-cheek. Yeah.
Like, forming a band, people always think I'm joking in that. And I was just very excited and trying to convince them to let me stay. I was like, we can make Israel and Palestine get along. We can get on top of the Pops. We can come on. Like a speech almost, so they didn't kick me out. So that was that. And things like my little brother's just concerned, really. He lived at the foot of my bed before he moved to London. I was just worried about him, so it came out in that song.
So that's autobiographical.
Yeah. Oh, they're all true, the songs.
How's your little brother doing now? You seem very concerned about him in that song.
He's okay. Got his hair cut, got a job in the sea. All works out fine. That's not true.
Terrific. Well, how about...
He hasn't hit you up to go roadie with him, with you guys yet, has he?
No. He's got his own band now called Loopy Velez. They're quite good.
Wow. Is there jealousy?
Oh, he's got a song that goes, he formed a band, but we formed a band just a little bit better.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Which I quite like.
We keep referencing the song Formed a Band. Is it possible that we could hear it?
Do you want to? Okay. Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Ready, Art Brut.
Look at us, we from the band. From the
trying to be rock and roll. What we're doing is talking to the kids. Formed a band. We formed a band. Look at us. We formed a band. Formed a band. We formed a band. Look at us. We formed a band. Formed a band. We formed a band. Look at us. We formed a band. Formed a band. We formed a band. Look at us. We formed a band. We are the band that's going to write the song that makes Israel and Palestine get along. And after that, take that song and play it forever on CD USA. Fans, we formed a band. Look at us. We formed a band. Formed a band. We formed a band. Look at us. We formed a band. Formed a band. We formed a band. Look at us. We formed a band. Formed a band. We formed a band. Look at us. We formed a band.
Ah, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. We're here with Art Brut at Wall to Wall Recording Studio. Dan Dietrich is manning the machines up there. Thank you so much, Dan. And it's a treat to have you guys here. You know, so much love for rock and roll and singing about loving playing rock and roll. Mm-hmm. But, you know, really, I mean, you guys are out of date. I mean, doesn't everybody want to, like, become an MC today? Isn't the idea of, like, you
or,
know...
Or
you know,
Coldplay. When you guys formed, Coldplay was the biggest band.
Yeah.
Ever, right?
Oh.
You
know?
Sagging.
I mean, you're dinosaurs, you know? Why rock and roll, fellas?
Why not? Yeah, we're punk rock.
You mentioned Jonathan Richman, though. You quoted the Modern Lovers' Roadrunner at the end of that song, which is great. And Jonathan Richman's kind of like the influence nobody talks about in your music, right?
Well, he's my hero. Like, I'm obsessed with him. So, like, pretty much. I mean, they can all take him or leave him, I think. But, like, I love him.
What was it about Richman's music that you liked? What appealed to you?
It's the way he writes about anything. Like, it's the variation in his songs is huge. He's, like, things about a bubblegum rapper in the breeze or buying new jeans or about... like Egyptian, him and his daughter, and or him and his wife. I mean, it's just so honest. I like that a lot.
But the thing is, Eddie, as we're talking to Eddie Argos of Art Brut, so there's the Modern Lovers, Richman, you know, where they were still a rock and roll band, very much influenced by the Velvet Underground, who you diss in another song, which ironically sounds like the Velvet Underground. But then, you know, Richman famously decided that he no longer wanted to make music that would hurt the ears of little babies. Yeah. And so he went completely acoustic. Yeah. But you stayed.
Yeah, well, I like his acoustic. I almost prefer his acoustic songs.
Really?
You forget that I'm not in charge of the music, see? I can't play anything. We should be acoustic and quiet.
I don't, not with those belts.
No. I much prefer, like, loud rock music. But I just love his lyrics, and I like the tunefulness of it all, and the playfulness of it. It's cool.
And, you know, we're talking about earlier the fact that you were sort of different from what else was going on in England at the time. Mm-hmm. And when you guys started, was that part of the idea? Like, we don't want to be like all these other bands that are out here.
I think we're just doing what we like. I think that was the point. We didn't intend on being successful, I think. We were just making friends, you know. There's no real plan with that group. We're not very well organized. There's no plan.
Yeah, but here it is. You guys pulled up to wall-to-wall downtown Chicago in a 40-foot tour bus, you know, and here you are in America, and, you know, all these rock critics and the media are coming out to see you at South by Southwest when we first saw you. Uh-huh. And, you know, you invented this dream, you made songs about it, you got lucky enough to put them out on a record, and now you're kind of living it. It's kind of
weird,
huh?
I don't want to scrutinize it too much in case, you know, I'll wake up or something. It'd be terrible, but...
Well, you just told us, Eddie, when you walked in here, that you found out that you had got signed to an American record deal by reading about it in Pitchfork.
Yeah, it's true. I don't really pay much attention. That's the problem. No, so.
It's almost kind of refreshing to see that you guys are obviously doing this for the music and the other stuff that, as opposed to the business side of it. The business side doesn't seem to interest you too much.
I don't think we're very business-minded. Look at us. Look at those belts.
Well, play something else for us, Art Brut, but tell us, Eddie, you know, how the song came together. How did you guys write it, and what inspired you?
Oh, what do you want? Do you want Emily Kane? Should we play Emily Kane next? play Emily Kane next, I think. Sorry. That's how well organised we are. Yeah, Emily Kane, she was like my first ever girlfriend. And we split up in a funny way and stuff.
Real name?
Real name, yeah, of course. But definitely the real name. And I'm like, for a long time, I still thought I was in love with her. When I wrote the words to this song, I still thought I was in love with her.
And have you heard from Emily since?
Yeah, I met her. And, I can explain it to you better in song form if you like.
Ah, that's great, isn't it? I just want to know what she said when she heard the song.
She didn't hear it to begin with, and she sent me a text saying, I hear you've written the song, whatever, and I sent a text back saying, yeah. She's like, is it mean? That's not really mean. It's quite nice, you know. She likes it. It's good.
All right. So. And you know, are you in touch now still?
Yeah, we're friends.
Special friends?
No, not special friends. We'll tell them in the song. We can do it in the song, I think.
All right.
Ready?
When we were 15, it's the happiest I've ever been. Even though we didn't understand how to do much more than just hold hands, there's so much about you I miss. The clumsy way we used to kiss. I wish I could tell you, you made a mistake. In memory serves, we're still on a break. Other girls went. I know you said it's for the best. I still don't understand why you left. There's so much about you I miss. Every time I see a cup of piss, I hope this song finds you fame. I want school kids in Chicago singing your name. Other girls went and other girls came. I can't get over my old flame. I'm still in love with Emily Kane.
So look, Emily, this is the part of the song where normally I say I've not seen Emily Kane in 10 years, but that would be a lie because she, as I just said, she got in touch and she phoned me, and it was so weird hearing that voice from my childhood speaking about things like credit card debt and university. But in that conversation, that's the point that I realised that the band were right all along. I wasn't really in love with Emily Kane. I was just in love with being in love when I was 15, which is a completely different thing, which I understand now.
Sort of.
Eddie Argos of Art Brute just played Emily Kane, and he promised that he would explain to us what he was talking about. He didn't need to explain the song.
No, indeed.
Because the explanation was already built in. These sort of monologues are sort of part of the songs, part of the set. Really great part of it. It's really hilarious, really entertaining. Kind of reminds me of, like, you know, my parents used to own a bunch of old Ink Spots records, and the guy would, you know, drop down, you know, I left you many years ago, and you know, you hear it on old country songs, and Jerry Butler would be doing it on soul songs in the 60s. Uh-huh. Where did you sort of pick up that sort of style, you know, these sort of interior stream of consciousness kind of things that come out, you know?
They're just true stories, so I can update them. I get bored really easily, so I just kind of like changing all the time. It's much easier changing it if you're just speaking and not making it rhyme.
Ah, there you go.
And Jonathan Richmond does that a lot too, so I kind of...
All right. Now, you've got the record coming out again in the United States, finally getting a proper release here. But this is kind of an older record for you guys now. I would imagine you've got a boatload of new songs and stuff.
Yeah, loads of new songs, yeah. We've got about 4 or 5. We're playing some of them live, but we think it's a bit... You want to, if you know, people haven't heard the old songs yet, so we're still kind of tampering with the set, so we've still got some old songs in it.
Do you feel like playing the songs as many times as you do? Do you feel like, geez, we'd love to move on, but that just the way the record industry works is that you've got to have this release in the US a year after it came out in the UK.
Yeah, it's okay, though. I mean, because we changed the music a lot and the words a lot and stuff. We changed loads of things live, so it's not like they're completely different songs than they were, say, 3 months ago live. So it's okay. They change all the time, so it's kind of cool.
And what about you guys? Does he ever crack you up with some of these monologues? And
don't really listen.
we tend not to encourage him, you know. It's probably best
kind
not
kind
to
of zone out and
yeah.
Like feedback.
All right, so you just groove on and whatever he's doing.
I imagine just a little bit of encouragement. He just keeps going and going and going.
Yeah, give him an inch, you know.
All right, it's been a pleasure, Art Brute. Thanks for coming here.
Oh, thanks for having us. It's been loads of fun.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
You're only halfway through your working day. I'm sorry, honey.
You're listening to Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio, Top of the Pops. Coming up, Granddaddy and Tool, new albums from those two groups, and My Desert Island Jukebox.
Every day is just like starting over. We try so hard, but we keep on falling over. Every day is just like starting over. We try so hard, but we keep on falling over. Just like starting over. We try so hard, but we keep on falling over. You're worried, and I have my doubts, but I'm drunk on a text, so I send post-soothing out. I just had a nasty flashback. We both used our cards for cashback. Way to explain why my pockets are full of change, and every day it's just like starting over. We try so hard, but we keep on falling over. Every day it's just like starting over.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio. That is a song called Geez Louise from the California band Granddaddy, Modesto, California, which markets itself, the official city slogan, Greg, the city of water, wealth, contentment, and health. That's a great song, Greg, and it kind of sets up the album just like the Fambly cat. Fambly spelled F-A-M-B-L-Y. The album opens with the very haunting sounds of a child asking again and again over this weird ambient backing music, what happened to the family cat? What happened to the family cat? Geez Louise captures that weird kind of sense of expectation and liberation and also fear and insecurity that comes when a teenager, presumably the band leader and singer, primary songwriter Jason Little, has his first sexual tryst in a Modesto motel. And I guess the girl's mother burst in on him. Yes, this is an album about endings, but also beginnings. Little is ready to move on with the rest of his life. Granddaddy has thrown in the towel after 14 years of slogging through the indie rock underground just on the cusp of success. They came closest with an album that you absolutely adored, 2000's The Software Slump, which was pretty much hailed by critics in US and England as one of the best records of 2000 and the absolute best at capturing, remember this, nostalgia for the new millennium, that weird sense of end of the millennium, end of the world, you know, everything was going to explode and the computers were all going to self-destruct, none of which happened, right? But, you know, these are a bunch of skate punks who turned into kind of like nature boys, who, you know, are
very stoned nature boys.
Very, very, yeah, very stoned nature boys who hated the kind of mechanical world and the strip mall world encroaching on their beloved redwoods and presumably, you know, mushrooms and marijuana fields, and disliked all of that and railed against it in their music. Well, railed is a hard word. They certainly hated it, but always these kind of dreamy, lilting, beautiful pop songs. This is their fourth album. They broke up in the process of making it. There were some substance abuse problems and the end of a romantic relationship that Little had. Also, communications problems. albums. We had them on an earlier incarnation of Sound Opinions. These guys didn't talk to us. They didn't talk to each other. You know, you can picture what life was like in that van as they crisscrossed this country and Europe trying to build an audience. They were great, but they never quite broke through to the mainstream success they deserved. And I think this album captures all of that. The regret and the celebration of how close they came and the fact that they still love the music. Let's play a song and then we'll give our thoughts on this. It's always a good sign, as I say, when there's four or five songs in competition. But we decided to play this one, Elevate Myself by Granddaddy on Sound Opinions.
Elevate Myself from Granddaddy's fourth album, Just Like the Fambly Cat. That song perfectly illustrates to me what they're about. You've got this kind of synthetic groove going on there. There's the modern man, you know, making the synthetic groove. And then that beautiful, spacious interlude there, which to me sort of evokes, you know, nature. They're nature boys. You know, here they are in this very provincial town. And you could just imagine people wanting to go crazy in a town like that. And yet they're surrounded by these amazing feats of nature. The beautiful desert, the mountains, the clash of that modernity and also of old values that seem to be fading. That's been like a key theme for Jason Little throughout the Granddaddy lexicon. And I think he encapsulates it perfectly on this record. This is a much better record than I initially gave it credit for. I was, as you said, a big fan of the Software Slump, which I thought sort of captured that mood of, as you said, millennial decay perfectly. Like the whole idea that it could end any minute and things are breaking down. Yeah. And again, things are breaking down in this record as well. And yet there's an amazing beauty sort of at the center of this sort of hollowed out universe. You know, the end of his impending marriage, the end of a miserable tour, the end of the band. And yet in the middle of this, there's just this incredible moment of clarity and beauty that he's finding. Like, everything's done, so I can start over.
So he's given it all up. He's broken up with these guys who he grew up with, formed the band with, and he's moved to the mountains of Montana.
Yeah,
where he says he's playing guitar and singing. So I don't think we've heard the last of Jason Little, and I'm sure that whatever he does is going to be great. I think this is a great note to go out on, and as far as I'm concerned, it's a buy-it record, Greg.
Yeah, I agree. On the patented Sound Opinions rating scale, buy it, burn it, trash it, this is definitely a buy-it record. That is Tool from their new album, 10,000 Days, a song called Wings for Marie, Part 1. Part 1 ought to tell you a lot about this band, because there is obviously a Part 2 attached to this. Between the two, this ode to Maynard James Keenan's mother encompasses 17 minutes of this record.
A record that, by the way, has debuted at number one on the Billboard charts, has sold over 560,000 copies in its first week, comes 5 years after the previous Tool record, Lateralus, that sold 2.2 million copies. Here is a band, incredibly commercially successful art and metal band, that gets very little radio airplay, doesn't get a lot of MTV play because their videos are just too damn weird. I mean, macabre, art house type of horror movie videos. They perform on stage in almost total blackness. They're sort of just silhouettes against a video screen on stage. Very media shy, don't do many interviews, don't have many photographs, and yet one of the most successful metal bands of the last decade and a half. They formed in L.A. in the early 90s. They release records about once every 4 or 5 years and have forged this incredible cult following in the millions. I think one of the keys to their success, Jim, is that they evoke that 70s progressive rock vibe and combine it with the new metal. So here's
that's NU with the umlaut over the U.
And all the worst that implies. I think they've done it way better than a lot of those cliched new metal bands. And one of the reasons is that they do have this fetish for art rock. The packaging on this album alone.
Yeah,
we were just rating the packaging on this record.
It comes with a set of stereoscopic glasses built into the cover so that you can see the 3D photographs.
The 3D artwork.
Like the 30 pages of a CD booklet jump out at you.
These guys were made for those triple album gatefold sleeves of the 70s. This is the kind of band that would do the sidelong suites, that would take the one side of the LP completely. This is the kind of record that kids are going to want to take into their room and not emerge for weeks until they've parsed every possible Byzantine secret that this record has to yield. So, yes.
Well, there are plenty, because it's kind of inscrutable. I mean, the song titles and the lyrics reference everybody from the genie in Pee-wee's Playhouse to Albert Hoffman, the Swiss chemist who accidentally discovered LSD, to Keenan's mother. 10,000 days is the amount of time she lingered between suffering a stroke and dying.
Yeah, these guys, they love the heaviness, not only in the sound, but they fathom themselves pseudo-intellectuals. They're beyond metal cliches, not only in terms of the content, but in the way that Keenan sings about them. He's not your classic metal wailer. This guy actually can sing. But we have a review of this record, but not before we play the first cut on the record. It's called Vicarious. And a slight caveat here, this is perhaps the hardest rocking song. So in that respect, perhaps a little unrepresentative, but here it is nonetheless. Vicarious from Tool on Sound Opinions.
Yes, that's Tool, the opening track of their 5 years in the making, fourth album, 10,000 Days, Vicarious. Greg, I don't know what you're talking about as far as Keenan being able to sing. To me, he sounds very much, you know, there's a joke, it's been a term that DJs and critics have used for years about nu metal vocalists, calling it Cookie Monster vocals. You know,
I think there's a lot of variation in his vocal style. I'm not complaining about that.
Well, you know, you mentioned the progressive rock ties, and certainly the virtuosity in the musicianship is there, the complicated arrangements are there, the atmosphere atmospheric sound effects and very dark side of the moon conversational snippets are there. The 17/8 time passages and tabla solos are there. What's not there is the fact that, you know, the best records by Genesis and Yes, groups like that, progressive rock groups, they had hooks. They had this crazy musical diversity. A song may last 12 minutes, it may go through 20 changes, but there were always hooks. What Tool doesn't have are hooks. The shorter of these songs clock in at 6.5, 7 minutes. The longest one, as you said, is this two-part suite at 17 minutes. We're talking Tales from Topographic Oceans territory there. No amount of overdubbed tabla and Cookie Monster vocals and arty obscurantism can camouflage a lack of songwriting. This is a monolithic, repetitive, monochromatic album. 10,000 days is how long it seems to take to get to the end of it.
Yeah.
You know, it just, there are moments that jump out that are very interesting, but boy, is this Much Ado about not that much at all.
Yeah, this is the Rubik's Cube metal album, and they want you to puzzle over, and they want you to spend days and days. I'm sorry, I agree. Lateralus, I enjoyed the heck out of that record. I thought it was a very, very good progressive metal record. And
I think this record is marginally better than Lateralus, which was two, like, kind of hair metal power ballads.
Oh, my God. But the thing about that is that it did have the power. I mean, the drumming on that record was monumentally great, I thought.
Yeah.
And I thought Adam Jones showed up in a big way. He's got those megaton riffs that he holds back, and then he lays them on you, and you feel like you're, you know, I feel like a 17-year-old kid with my head being imploded in my,
he's the guitarist.
Know, in my room, yeah.
You know these guys, you know, I'll tell you where the audience of these guys are. If you check out the last 2 or 3 years' covers of Guitar World and Modern Drummer magazine, Jones and Danny Carey the drummer have been, like, on one out of every five covers, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So it's kids in their bedroom wanting to play like these guys.
And those kids, exactly, Jim, and I think those kids are going to be disappointed by this because there's not enough of that. I think Carey is way mixed down in this record.
But there's
which
tabla.
Which is a huge mistake.
There's tabla.
I don't think the tabla substitute for the drumming he was doing on the previous record. Adam Jones, too, more about the mood setting rather than the riffs. Give me the riffs. I want the riffs. And they're not here.
So, Greg, it sounds like you're a trash it. I would say burn it because there are a couple of interesting moments, and you need the cover art, which is really cool. Of course, if you burn the record, you don't get the cover art.
Hey, that's really the way I feel about it. Buy the cover art, throw out the disc.
Yeah.
I tell you, little buddy, this whole island is bewitched.
Remember, we were shipwrecked together.
All right, it's that time of the show for the Desert Island Jukebox Pick. This week, it is Jim DeRogatis' turn to take a record with him to a desert island that he can't live without.
Thank you, Mr. Cott. We heard a little bit of Jonathan Richman and the Modern Lovers earlier in the show because we talk so much with Eddie Argos and the guys in Art Brute about the Modern Lovers as an influence. Some of our younger listeners may only know of the Modern Lovers or Jonathan Richman as that geeky guy who's the troubadour in Something About Mary. Other listeners, you know, their parents may know of the Modern Lovers as this weird folk band, which they were. But when they started out, formed in Massachusetts in the early 1970s, they were something else entirely. Richman was a huge fan of Lou Reed and the Velvet Underground, and in one point moved from Boston to New York, hoping to convince Lou Reed to let him sleep on his couch. You know, he wanted to do what the Velvet Underground had done. And he did, with the first version of the Modern Lovers. Talk about an incredible band. David Robinson, the drummer, would go on to propel the Cars. Jerry Harrison would become the keyboard player of the Talking Heads. Ernie Brooks, the bassist, probably the least known, but was a journeyman musician in countless noteworthy groups in Boston for 3 decades. We last saw him on stage with Rhys Chatham at South by Southwest a couple of weeks ago. Richman leading the band on vocals and guitar. They recorded their first album in 1972 with John Cale of the Velvet Underground producing. Again, Richman loved that influence. It was raw, it was ragged, it was garage rock, and clearly pointing to this new sound that only a couple of years later would be called punk. It was never released until 1976. And by that time, the band had long broken up in its original incarnation. Richman had this awakening where he decided that he only wanted to play music that would not disturb the ears of babies in the audience, that they could sleep through his concert. Everything went acoustic, everything went cutesy, everything got stripped down. The other Modern Lovers all moved on to these other bands because they wanted to rock. And rock they did. When this album finally came out, it was a huge influence on groups like the Sex Pistols and the Ramones. The Sex Pistols would cover Roadrunner, which is probably the Modern Lovers' best-known song. I'm not going to play that. That's too obvious. Earlier, we heard Government Center. It's songs in that mold that Argos is taking his cue from. Songs about the everyman dweeb, kind of like, nobody loves me, I can't get a girlfriend, I'm sitting here at the Government Center watching beautiful women stroll by. I think She Cracked is one of those songs that captures that. That's the tune I'm going to play from the Modern Lovers' self-titled debut. Because it's interesting, there's this undercurrent of anger. You know, Eddie knows he's playing the nerd, and there's a large part of the nerd in him in Art Brut, but he was the coolest guy in the room. I mean, I think he's one of the coolest guys we've Absolutely. Ever had on Sound Opinions. In She Cracked, Richman is railing at this girl. You know, she was sensitive. She understood me. She understood the European things from 1943. She's this art-loving aesthete who happens to be killing herself with drugs and alcohol, while Richman is the everyman who sits at home. You know, she eats junk food and gets stoned, and I sit at home alone and eat health food. There's that wonderful kind of self-effacing quality to his music, which, when combined with the rock that the first Modern Lovers gave it, I mean, listen to that organ. Listen to that trashy garage rock organ. Listen to those drums. The way the song breaks down in the middle, and it's that rhythmic break where you're just counting and waiting for it to come back in. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, She Cracked is on a short list of one of the all-time perfect rock songs. Here it is, Modern Lovers on Sound Opinions.
Well, she was sensitive. She understood me. She understood the European things from 1943. But she does all these.
Cracked from Jonathan Richman. That's Jim's Desert Island Jukebox pick for tonight. A great one.
Next week, we've got another good show for you. We're very excited to bring you a 40th anniversary tribute to one of the great albums of all time, The Beatles' Revolver.
We haven't done one of these classic album dissections in some time, certainly not in our new incarnation on Chicago Public Radio. It's going to be a treat to dive in deep with that record. On the way out, we got some folks to thank. Dan Dietrich, head engineer over at Wall-to-Wall Recording Studio, did a great job mixing and recording Art Brut. Top of the Pops.
Yes.
And everybody there was great to us when we were over there. As always, Tori Malatia is our executive producer. Todd Bachman is our managing producer and director. Matt Spiegel's the producer. Jason Saldana and Robin Lynn are our associate producers. We get legal help from Dino Armiros, technical assistance from Joe Dassault.
And as usual, thanks for listening.